Well, welcome and thank you for listening to another episode. And as this podcast takes form, one of the things I would like to do is talk about different topics, introductory, namely remarks, as way of whetting your appetite to explore alternative ideas. As I said in my very first episode, I'm trying to, in my life, trying to coexist between two philosophical, spiritual, religious, cultural worlds, and they are the Western and Eastern ways. I consider myself to be a Christian, not your average typical Christian, and I'm sure for many conservative, radicalized evangelical Christians, they would say I'm a wolf in sheep's clothing, and that's okay. But there's so much in this world, so much beauty, so much truth, awesomeness, that how can one turn a blind eye and be resistant to it? There's so much wisdom to be had, to be learned, to be inspired by through teachers and scriptures and communities. And for me, now that I'm in my 30s, I'm confident to take some bold moves and explore things that are outside the box, outside play. I don't want to limit myself, in other words. But this episode is going to be a little bit different. I'm going to be talking about something that my work holds follows by, and on reflection of this something, I think it's actually quite applicable for people in general. So what I do in my work, I work in mental health, namely, work also with a little bit of learning disability and difficulties, but I mainly support people with a form of mental health. It's care, it's trying to promote one's ability to be the best that they can be to function in life. So it's very practical based. I'm a support worker or a senior support worker. Love my job. And recently, I was motivated and intrigued by something called dignity and care, or dignity. And I am what they call a dignity champion. All these amazing titles. Woof. Go ego. Anyway, recently I've been doing some training on what is dignity. I call it dignity and care. It's a very ambiguous word, dignity, because there are lots of different ideas around it. There's no full-bodied definition of dignity. I mean, naturally, most people would say it's respect. It's being kind. It's being a voice, or empowering someone else to have a voice, being an advocate, those sort of things. It's respecting privacy. There are elements that make up dignity, and I just think that what I'm going to talk about today is seven, what we call seven principles of dignity, and this is what my fellow colleagues adhere by in terms of producing the best support we can and care for our fellow clients. And they're not just for our clients, but they're for the way we work as a team. And I think in general, you can just apply these as well. So it's going to be a little bit different. It's off topic of forms of spirituality, religion, philosophy. Well, this could be a philosophy, but it does tie into all those things anyway. It's more secularized, I would say. So there are seven principles of dignity, and these principles form good, dignified practice in care, and perhaps I would say in life in general. These are good principles to live by. So the first one is called value the uniqueness of every individual. The second is called uphold the responsibility to shape care and support services around each individual. The third is valuing communicating with individuals in ways that are meaningful to them. The fourth is recognize and respect how an individual's dignity may be affected when supported with their personal care. Number five, recognize that an individual's surroundings and environments are important to their sense of dignity. Number six, value workplace cultures that actively promote the dignity for everybody. And then number seven, finally, recognize the need to challenge care that may reduce the dignity of the individual. So if you're a care worker, you will certainly find this very relevant. If not, do bear with me. Have a listen to these seven principles that we can get things out of this, which is very practical for your day-to-day life. And a general definition, as I say, it was very difficult to get a full-body definition of dignity, or specifically, in my case, when I was doing a little bit of training the other day, dignity and care, I defined it as dignity and care, or dignity in general, in our case, in a very broad term, is made of four elements: kindness, empathy, respect, and duty, woven all together in our daily living, or if you're a care worker, in our daily practice. I use the word practice because it's more, just feels to be more meaningful. Those four elements: kindness, empathy, respect, and duty. I believe they make up what is known to be dignity, giving someone dignity, care in dignity. And to break those four elements down, they go into seven principles. And if you keep these seven principles in mind, then by default, without much effort, you are expressing kindness and empathy and respect and duty, mindfully emplaced within what we do on a day-to-day basis. So number one, value the uniqueness of every individual. Like with my fellow clients, it's about knowing who the client is. Like with people in general, your family, your friends, your community, your fellow work colleagues, whatever sort of job you may do. Value their uniqueness. Get to know their likes and their dislikes, their beliefs, what they can do, their skills. Show that you value what they treasure. Value the uniqueness of every individual. By doing so, you are entering into their world and you're showing them respect. You're showing them an interest. Like in my case, I think of my wife. I value her. I value her uniqueness. She's not a carbon copy of me. There are things about her that I absolutely love, and there are things about her that I'm working on. But I show her dignity by first of all valuing her uniqueness, valuing what makes her her. I love her, and I love her because of all the wonderful things that make her what she is. I take an interest in what she does. I loosely say common sense. But again, this requires, in your practice, in your work, in the success of a relationship — I've been with my wife now for about 10 years. It's entering into the world, so it's being present. It's coming into the very moment and sharing that very moment with that other person and cherishing that person over yourself, putting yourself aside, decreasing the ego, taking an interest in her or him, in that person. So that's number one, value the uniqueness of every individual. Number two, uphold the responsibility to shape care and support services around each individual. So what this means in the care world is basically we want our support, we want our work to be what we call person-centered. In other words, if I'm with a client on a, and it's a one-to-one basis, I'm not going to put myself in the mix of what I want to do for the day with that client in the sense of let's make it about him or her. Let's find out what they want to do. Let's find out how we can do that with them. Let's help them, guide them in making good choices, not forcing them to make good choices. We all have the right to make bad choices, but doing it in such a way that's nurturing, that's pastoral. But namely, it's creating something that's centered on them. And again, I think of my wife. I think I'll probably be referencing her a lot. Not that I do this every day, mind you. No one's perfect. So I'm not saying I've sussed it all out. I'm not some awesome husband or anything. Far from it. She'll tell you that. But it's like, darling, what do you want to do today? Like, for example, the other day we went to Taunton. I really wanted to have a curry. She really wanted to have a pizza. We went for the pizza because I wanted to make it about her because I get joy when she's happy. And then we went to the cinema afterwards. I wanted to watch Captain Marvel. She don't like Captain Marvel. She want to go and watch Fighting with the Family or something, which is all about some wrestler from Yorkshire or something going to join WWE. It's a true story. Found it boring, but the fact is she's interested in it and her happiness is my happiness. So it's orientating your mindset once again. Again, it requires mindfulness, but it's orientating the altruistic side, becoming more altruistic, finding happiness in someone else, finding delight and pleasure in someone else, making them happy. My dad used to say to me, son, if you're all right, I'm all right. So it's making, spending our time with someone, it's making them feel like they really matter, that they are a unique individual and that your time is their time. Their time is your time. Vice versa. Sharing your time with someone. And again, be wise with your time. I wrote a little post about this the other day, but Seneca, for example, who's a Stoic philosopher, he says about being stingy with your time, because obviously we all know this. We have a limited amount of time left. We don't know when we're going to die. We don't know when something's going to happen that's going to change our whole world. So invest your time in someone wisely. Choose who you plan to do that with. And when you do choose that time with someone or with someone's, make it about them. I'm convinced that if we want to be happy in life, there needs to be a good amount of service to others, because they want to be happy. And if you can make them happy, then you're going to get the byproduct of being happy yourself and learn and develop a way of enjoying that as well. It's certainly a sucker punch to forms of depression and anxiety if you can get out of your own skin, stop being so self-absorbed, and think about someone else. I mean, I've heard on the casual, scientifically proven, that when you work in forms of care, for example, that kind of has a positive effect on the brain. And for many, who have depression, that's a great way of managing and combating and reducing those forms of states. That's probably why there are many people with forms of mental health working in the care world. I'm one of them. Making good progress, mind you, but yeah. It's nothing better than being a service, being a joy maker for someone else. It makes you feel good. And I don't think that's accidental. I think that's biologically sound. There's a reason for that. Certainly in every religious tradition, there's always talk about service of others, loving your neighbour as yourself, as the Christ would say. Principle number three. Value communicating with individuals in ways that are meaningful to them. In the care world, I used to work with a client who was autistic, low verbal communication, didn't have a great choice of vocabulary, so would often talk in a very general way. So, for example, he would say, burger and chips. And that might mean that he's hungry. That might mean he's thirsty. That might mean he just wants to go out. So what I did in the end with this particular person was I made the effort, once again, being mindful, person-centered, focused on the individual, ways of helping him to communicate. So that would either be teaching this young man new words, specific words. And we got to the point where he could say specific words. Like, for example, if he wanted to go out for a meal, he had a favorite restaurant, he'd call it Le Cage. Awesome. And that's the name of the restaurant. Other times it would be pictures. He would choose the picture. And often it would be, I'm thirsty. I need a drink. I haven't drunk for like 4 hours, So it's finding ways of communicating. And so how can we talk about this in this world here? Well, let's be mindful, aware of other people's body language, what they're projecting. Valuing privacy. There's nothing worse than going up to someone who might be very, very upset, asking them if they're all right, and then getting them to talk to you in front of everyone else. Becoming aware of your surroundings. Maybe they need to be, you need to talk to them in private. Maybe it's not actually saying anything at all in those sort of circumstances, and it's just listening. Too often we are quick to give our opinion, thinking that that's going to solve the issue. Sometimes, perhaps more often than not, we should just be listening, saying, I'm here for you. And generally, people can work it out for themselves, because I believe everyone has that sort of... Everyone has that sort of wisdom to, deal with whatever crisis they're going through. They just need somebody to have... They just need a presence with them. They just need someone that they can just fall back on. For example, with my wife, I'm learning over the years that often it's not the answer she's looking for, the verbal answer. It's just actually, she just needs to tell me something. And she just needs to feel like she's... And she just needs to be hugged. And they say, don't they, that you communicate more in your body language than you do with your verbal. So think of ways of how you can be a better listener, because that is a form of communication. Become a disciplined warrior in listening. And that could be that's a very good thing. Listening to someone is terribly meaningful to someone as well. Because again, you're giving your time, your attention to someone. I say this a lot, but there's nothing worse than someone's telling you something and you're thinking about something else, and you make it very evident in your body language that you're not there. You might as well just get your phone out and just text them in front whilst they're talking to you. Me, I consider that to be very rude. But there's nothing better, more kind, more loving than being here and giving them your full attention. And again, that doesn't happen overnight. It certainly hasn't happened with me. But I do try with my wife, for example. this is an episode where I'm trying to justify myself before my wife. Okay. Number four. Recognize and respect how an individual's dignity may be affected when supported with personal care. Boy, if you read the news a lot over the years, certainly in England, there have been cases where care workers have abused their clients. There was a care home in Bristol once, and their clients were bathed in cold water. Some clients were. I remember seeing one video where an old elderly person was rolling around in the garden, soaking wet, and the staff were laughing at this. Awful abuse. And in the care world, we are always mindful about how we treat someone. This is where empathy comes in, and you know, putting yourself in their shoes. For example, it's a common one, and it's not done on purpose. It's just not being mindful. You're bathing someone, okay? So you've washed their back, and now they're capable of washing their front. Do you just stand there looking at them whilst they wash the front parts of themselves? No, because if it was me, and I was unable to wash my own back and do my hair or whatever, but I know I could do my front, and I got a sense of dignity in myself, a sense of self-worth, and some woman or bloke particularly is just standing by the bathtub looking at me, waiting for me to do my stuff, I'm going to tell him to fuck off. And that's the same thing here. It's being mindful. It's doing as little as possible in the sense of empowering the client to do as much for themselves. But the stuff that they do for themselves, well, do you have to be in the room? Why don't you just walk out and give them a bit of privacy? How could we apply this in the practical world? How could we? Well, if you're a peeping Tom, stop being a bloody peeping Tom and being nosy at what the neighbour is doing. I'm not sure how we could apply this, but I think it would be probably to say that let's respect people's space and privacy. For example, in some church cultures, people, it's popular to go around hugging people. And too often this is assumed as being very loving. And it can be very damaging. It can be quite intimidating. Some people just don't want to be hugged. Certainly if you enter into church for the first time and you get a load of strangers hugging you, that sometimes is not required. It's just to be normal and to have a handshake or just say hello. So respecting people's space. Again, body language is so important. Not invading people's privacy. If someone is praying, why do you need to make a noise? Why do you need to chat in the background? If you hear other people chatting in the background, tell them to shut up. Someone's praying. Respecting privacy. All right, this is going a little off tangent now, but like gossip, for goodness sake. You know, one of the killers, I believe, in the care world, for example, which makes a job real shitty, is the fact of a team cannot help themselves but gossip and backstab others. When the team is ripping itself apart, you cannot give good quality support to the client, and in turn, your job becomes fucking horrible. So that's, yeah. So empathy, putting yourself in someone else's shoes. Would you want to be treated the way you're treating them right now? Respecting their space and privacy. Okay, principle number five. Recognize that an individual's surroundings and environments are important to their sense of dignity. So, for example, I can think of one immediately. So, a pastor once said to me that, you know, you can tell what someone's lifestyle is like by what they have in their house. And he was speaking broadly to Christians, saying, you know, why are you having statues of the Buddha? You know, books on random Middle Eastern things. Whoops, I've got plenty of that in my house. And it's like, well, hang on a second, buddy. Who gives you the right to judge someone's spiritual walk and just condemning someone, you know? When you come into someone's house, show them respect. Learn the culture of the house. Feel the culture of the house. And, you know, what he was initially doing was using someone's own sacred space, private life, against them. And it's like, no, you should never make anyone feel paranoid or uncomfortable about what they have in their own house just because it doesn't fit your religious iota, quota, bloody whatever. In America, I went to Boston, and there was a pastor there, and he said, "Dan, you know, help yourself to the fridge." And being British and modest, it was like, "Oh, just a little bit. Oh, I'll just have a tad bit." But he was like, literally, "No, help yourself," you know. And it's like, yes, okay, that makes me feel uncomfortable because that's my cultural, social background of, well, you know, we save money, we conserve food, we don't have too much. No, don't rub your culture with theirs, you know, embrace it. Enter again, once again, into their world. Value their uniqueness, as it were. You know, the work I do, the clients live in their own apartments or houses or rooms or whatever. And every single one is different. And that's great because it's like these people can be who they want to be. So some of the stuff that's in their house is just shocking. You know, it can be like corpse paintings and skeletons littered everywhere. It can be just plain old boring looking rooms. But I won't show them that I'm shocked or that I'm like, wow, you don't have great taste. I'll enter in and I'll make the effort to be like, enjoy what they've got. And at the same time, if they want space themselves, if they want to have quite private time, that's absolutely fine as well. And again, it's knowing, going back into the practical world for all us who are, you know, for you who are not care workers, it's like, it's knowing when you overstay your welcome with someone, for example, picking up the signs. You know, don't be a leech and just suck the life out of someone's time. You know, if they're getting a bit agitated because they just want you to move on, then do it. Just go. You know, you don't be a burden to someone. So once again, it's being mindful and recognizing people's body language. But in this particular case of Principle 5, enter into that world, enjoy it, value it, dig with it, feel it, play with it, be absorbed by it. Show them that you love being here. Wonderful. Principle number six. Value workplace cultures that actively promote the dignity for everybody. And that's probably the easiest one out of all of them to make practical for everyone. You know, do unto others as you would like to be done to yourself. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Don't be a gossiper. Don't be a backstabber. Don't be a liar. Don't be a cheat. Don't be a stealthy manipulator where you'll step on someone else's failures for your own success. Learn to work together as a unit. Oh, hello, cat. Learn to work together as a unit. Become a unit. Put the fires out of those sort of things anyway. Uplift each other. Serve one another. Consider, as Paul would say in the scriptures, others to be greater than yourself. Your ego is big. My ego is big. But we are born and we are made for community, for cooperation. And that is so essential. Be a beacon of morality and justice. Marcus Aurelius would be proud of that. But you're made to work together, to be hands and feet. What's the point of going against that? You're only going against your own nature. And overall and effectively, reducing your happiness and other people's happiness. Like I said, in the care world, if the team is ripping itself apart with pride and self-ambition and gossip, goodbye good quality practice of care, and poor examples of how it is to be a bloody human being, you know. So if you're one of those sort of people, then stop it. Sort yourself out. Stop being a cancerous tumor. You know, be a worker of, what was that Jesus said? That's right, Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. Be a peacemaker. Number seven, finally. Recognize the need to challenge care that may reduce the dignity of the individual. This comes more in along the lines, for example, in care work, there's always been high percentages of abuse. And in years, in England, again, for example, I can't speak of other countries, but certainly in England, there has been a lot of time and effort and money and attention and work being put into how we can reduce different forms of abuse. And I suppose the biggest forms of abuse that still currently take place in the care world in England would be forms of neglect, financial abuse, and I would say emotional abuse. And so we're charged as care providers, care workers, whatever you want to call it, with being aware. Again, being mindful about what other people are doing and stepping in when it's poor. I remember, for example, once I was key working a client, and it was obvious that he was in a lot of distress, and the staff member was on their phone. And so I had to take that person aside and talk to that person, saying, look, you do know that this client, he's trying to tell you something, and you are not being respectful because you're just on your phone texting. What are you doing? How rude are you? This is an individual. This is a human being. And so it's being an advocate for those who don't have a voice. It's standing up for those who currently are not able to stand up for themselves or make their wishes known, to express, to verbalize what it is. It's being that advocate. And I think this goes, again, in general with what we do in the world and in our communities. It's being aware of how people treat other people. It's you being a role model for others. You know, if you're a little bit shallow on your values, you know, if you're a little bit low on that, then get your head into some good religious books. Get yourself in the Bible, get yourself in the Sanskrits, whatever you want to call it. But get yourself some good values and morals and then live by them. And again, it's being that voice for others who are too timid at this present moment. And certainly in the work culture, in the care culture, for example, again, like I said before, it's about person-centered practice. So it's being focused on the client themselves. It's putting aside your own agendas and thinking about how can we promote the well-being of that client? How can we help promote good choices? How can we promote, generally speaking, happiness for that person? What can we do? And ultimately, as I say, it's about being a voice for people. There's nothing worse than seeing an immoral act and you just walk by. Just like, you know, for example, there's an old story in the Bible of a man gets beaten up, he's left on the side, his own pastor walks past him, doesn't attend to him, his own mates walk past him, they don't attend to him, but the person that does attend to him is the person who culturally was considered his enemy. He did the right thing, and he this enemy supposedly cared for him, brought him back up to full strength. So a regular reflection of what one does in their life is very important. So that's the seven principles, and secular and as they may be, they are practical. And if you want to find out more, just type in dignity champion or dignity in care, and at some point you will find on the internet these seven principles. And then with these seven principles, and I won't do it today, I probably won't do it all again, but it does come with the 10 dignity do's. And in my opinion, these 10 dignity do's are the fruit of the seven principles of dignity, which are the fruit of what I believe to be the four elements that make up dignity, which is kindness. If anything else, just remember this. If you want to treat others with dignity, it's four elements: kindness, empathy, respect, and duty, woven in your daily practice of being a human being. See you soon. Namaste.